How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me,
the genes of you and me,
we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. We're all made of DNA.
Hi, you're listening to DNA Today, a podcast and radio show where we discover new advances in the world of genetics. From genetic technology like CRISPR to rare diseases to new research, we have you covered. For a decade, DNA Today has brought you the voices of leaders in genetics. I'm Kira Dineen. I'm a certified genetic counselor and your host. Joining me for this episode are guests from Phenotyp. So I'm really excited to be recording with both of them today. Our first guest is Dr. Orion Bousquet, who is the CEO of Phenotyp. He holds a PhD in computer science from the University of Toronto, where he specialized in algorithms for genome analysis and rare disease patient matchmaking. He co-leads the Global Alliance for Genomics and Health Pedigree Standard Working Group, which kind of gives you a teaser of what we're going to be talking about in today's episode. Our other guest is Erica Peacock, who is the Genetics Workflow Consultant at Phenotyp. She holds an MSc degree in genetic counseling from the University of British Columbia, and she's certified by the American Board of Genetic Counseling. And for those that might be thinking, Phenotyp, where have I heard that name before? Might seem familiar to you as I host the Phenotyp Speaker Series, which is a live webinar about genetic topics. So very similar to DNA Today in a lot of ways. What's cool about it that DNA Today doesn't have is a live Q&A session. So this is really cool because it's a live event. So, you know, we're in Zoom on YouTube and you're able to ask our guests questions. And so I'm the host for that. And then it's released as a podcast. So you get best of both worlds there. So you can search Phenotyp Speaker Series wherever you're listening to this podcast. And to tease this episode, so as a member of the LGBTQIA community, I am really excited to talk about building inclusive software for genetic counseling in this episode, especially in the spirit of Pride Month, this month in June. And while I'm thinking of it, stay tuned for next week's episode. We are sharing our June installment of the Phenotyp Speaker Series, which I think it's going to pair really nicely with this conversation, as it's about improving gender-affirming care in genetic counseling and features a fellow genetic counselor and a transgender patient advocate. So I feel like I've been talking forever. Orion, welcome back to the show. You were on episode 144 of March 2021. Are there any new updates with Phenotyp in the last year plus?
Thanks, Kira. It's great to be back. Yeah, I think a lot has sort of changed the company. We're now a venture-backed startup. The team has almost doubled in size. We've expanded to support a lot of additional hospitals and health systems around the world. We're now supporting some genomic medicine service alliances in the UK, which is incredibly exciting to expand to additional trusts there, really focusing on how do we mainstream genomic medicine around the world and in different health systems. So that's sort of the big focus on everyone's mind. In terms of product, we've sort of expanded with a lot of new features and different work, a lot of focus in terms of integrating more deeply within electronic health record systems like Epic and Cerner. A lot of improvements to the pedigree in particular with cancer genetics in mind. I think we'll get into some of those during the discussion today. And then really a lot of work to help streamline the intake of patients for both general genetics and cancer genetics. We have a patient intake questionnaire and trying to help patients provide more a thorough family history and health information and have that then automate a lot of the work that the genetic counselors would otherwise have to do on that intake.
Yeah, we
process.
Love that aspect, definitely. Right, Erica? yeah, I think Phenotyp, you guys have grown so much and it's been so exciting to watch you guys grow as I've worked with you. I started working with you guys like right as the pandemic hit is when we started the speaker series, the Phenotyp speaker series. So it's just been so exciting. It's like, oh, there's this new team member and this person to meet, and just so many new features. And it's just great to see the impact that Phenotyp has had in the genetic community worldwide, because it's just so amazing, especially during the webinars that we're connecting with a lot of people in the UK, as you mentioned, Canada, the US, it seems to be those are where a lot of people are tuning in from, but really all over the world. And, you know, one of the things that I continuously hear from people working in genetics is the pedigree builder and just how great that is that Phenotypes has built. Can you remind our audience about the pedigree builder and maybe speak a little bit more to that?
Sure. I guess at a high level, so their Phenotypes has a built-in pedigree builder, pedigree drawing tool. Within it, it was actually one of the very first modules that we added way back when we were just a research project at SickKids Hospital here in Toronto and the University of Toronto. It's one of the most widely, I would say, appreciated modules within the application. And it's just the user interface for managing all of the relationships between the different patients or participants that people are managing within their Phenotypes instance.
Yeah, it's definitely widely loved. I was shocked when I was looking at some statistics that you offer on the website, phenotypes.com, that over 95% of users agree it's the best pedigree drawing software that they've used. And that's a really strong statistic, I gotta say. What do you think about the Phenotypes pedigree builder makes it so widely loved, especially compared to other ones that are out there, even ones that have been around for longer?
That's a complicated question. I think
it
there
is.
Are a few
that
different...
was not an easy question I gave you right there.
I think there are a few reasons, at least from our side, why we see that might be the case. I guess we got our start as a research organization. And so what that I think means is that even from the beginning, we built it to tackle some of the sort of hardest cases that come up. So really supporting both research and clinical use cases. So I guess now as we've grown, we've really tried to make the simple cases easy, but that making sure that those complicated cases are still possible. So everything from multi-generational linkages to sort of very complex pedigree structures and other sorts of fine-grained editing that you might not otherwise be able to do within other tools. I think one of the other things that we put a huge amount of effort in is just trying to make it so that all of the layout algorithms, of which I would say that is a very significant portion of the complexity of the software, all of that complexity is there behind the scenes working to try to make it so that a nice, clean pedigree ends up being able to be presented to users at the end of the day. So that's what we've at least tried to do.
Definitely important and appreciated by, you know, the genetic professional working community, I'd say, to include people that aren't genetic counselors that are using this as well. HemaShare Therapeutics is dedicated to developing therapies that help improve the lives of patients with rare genetic diseases. HemaShare scientists have developed an investigational therapy to treat methylmalonic acidemia and propionic acidemia. These ultra-rare genetic diseases lead to the rapid buildup of toxins in the body. Patients can suffer from intellectual disability, liver, kidney, or cardiac disease, and other life-threatening conditions. HemaShare is conducting a clinical trial to assess if their drug may be effective in the treatment of both methylmalonic acidemia and propionic acidemia. Learn more about HemaShare and these ultra-rare metabolic diseases in episode 188 of DNA Today. You can also visit HemaShare.com. That's HemaShare.com. PerkinElmer Genomics is a global leader in genetic testing, focusing on rare diseases, inherited disorders, newborn screening, and hereditary cancer. Testing services support the full continuum of care from preconception and prenatal to neonatal, pediatric, and adult. Testing options include sequencing for targeted genes, multiple genes, the whole exome or genome, and copy number variations. Using a simple saliva or blood sample, PerkinElmer Genomics answers complex genetic questions that can proactively inform patient care and end the diagnostic odyssey for families. Learn more at PerkinElmerGenomics.com. You know, as I mentioned at the top of the show, as part of Pride celebration this month, I really wanted to have more conversations that were focused on the LGBTQI plus community. And, you know, first off, Erica, could you give our audience a summary of the purpose of a pedigree and what information is typically collected in one? Because, you know, definitely Orion and I have been talking about like features and everything, but I'm realizing maybe some people listening are like, remind me, what's a pedigree? What are we included in that? And like, that's our bread and butter as genetic counselors, right?
For sure. And I think that's a great place to start is what is the pedigree? What information is on it? And what is it used for? So I think first and foremost, as genetics providers, professionals, we think of it as a way to record medical history about a family. And so it has the family structure information, how individuals are related to one another, and certain traits or conditions that might be carried down throughout a family. And so that's, I think, first and foremost what we think of it as. It's something that's part of the medical record, and it's a quite official documentation of that, but it's so much more than that. It shows so much insight into the family dynamics and the family story, and it's quite a sensitive place to be in to collect that kind of information. And so I think that's always kind of top of mind is, you know, honoring that you're part of that experience of collecting that information, and using it as a rapport building tool with your patients is also one way it's applied in genetics.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point and one that's often not brought up. I think when we're often talking about family health history, we're saying, okay, let's get the information. But it also is an opportunity to be connecting with your patient. And in a genetic counseling session, a lot of it is focused on, okay, like we're educating the patients, but it really flips, you know, the microphone almost, if, you know, you're not recording, but, you know, flips the script a little bit in terms of having them educating you about their family history, and learning about, you know, their family dynamics too, I think is important when we're asking about the health of certain individuals in the family. Maybe they don't have a relationship with them. Maybe they're super close with them and everything in between, and just, you know, the different representation of diversity within the family history, I think too, is, you know, I want to focus on, you know, sex, gender, sexuality, you know, during this conversation. And I think one place to start with that is really identifying why it's important to denote someone sex assigned at birth, because that's something that, you know, being trained in genetic counseling, we're like, okay, squares are males, circles are females. But I think we're going to go beyond that a little bit in this conversation. But why is it important to denote the sex assigned at birth and have that specifically?
Yeah, and so sex assigned at birth is really a label that's put on a person based on certain characteristics at birth, whether it be their reproductive organs, hormones, or chromosomes. And I think in genetics, it's really important to highlight why you're collecting that information. And so there's different scenarios I can think of that information would be really important to know about your patient, but also the family as well. So one good example is thinking of X-linked inheritance conditions. And so that's a situation where if you're counseling a family around that, it's really important to know the sex assigned at birth of the whole family. And so typically we think of folks with two X chromosomes being assigned female at birth, and males having an X and Y chromosome. So I would say that's one situation where it's important. Another one would be in cancer genetic counseling, where you're counseling around conditions that have an increased incidence of cancer in certain organs. So it's important to know if someone has a prostate in the family or someone has breast tissue, for example. And having many people affected by cancer or unaffected by cancer, it really does depend if they're males or females.
Yeah, I think that's important to know. And I like that phrasing that I've been seeing used more and more, like, okay, people with prostates, people with this specific organ, I think can be really helpful and inclusive in that way, to say, okay, in that cancer setting, people that have more breast tissue are at a higher risk. So people that, you know, maybe, you know, we'd say females, but really to include more people to say, okay, people with this organ have a chance of having this cancer. And certainly in families where we have, you know, a limited family structure of some kind, where maybe, you know, we don't have a lot of females or we don't have a lot of males, or we may not see certain cancers coming up, we have to take all these pieces together. So there certainly is a reason why we're denoting that. And I think another one kind of along similar lines is, you know, in terms of, I guess, your pedigree builder too, of speaking to that, like how you plan to incorporate same-sex couples utilizing a donor or donors to conceive. And that also includes, you know, people that are in heterosexual relationships that are using donors, right? So I think that really opens up the door. But how are you planning to incorporate this into pedigree builders?
Yeah, absolutely. Our tool actually already supports same-sex couples.
Amazing. That's the answer I was looking for.
So yeah, that's an easy answer. And then in terms of, representing different families, and as you know, there's different ways of conceiving and having a pregnancy, and we want to make sure that we're encompassing and being able to represent all sorts of family structures, whether there's a sperm donor involved, an egg donor involved, a gestational carrier. So those symbols are on our product roadmap for this year, and we're really excited to incorporate those, because I think it's just a no-brainer.
Yes, definitely. I think if it's, you know, once you put it into the software, I mean, I'm not as computer savvy, especially as Orion is, but, you know, I think once you're able to put that into the software, it's just, it's so important to include. And I think some people listening might think, well, how often is this happening? As a prenatal genetic counselor, I can say a lot. I'm constantly using these symbols, and it's just really important to have that right on hand, that it's part of standard nomenclature. And when we say nomenclature, part of that in terms of pedigree is like, what symbol are we using or what symbol are we drawing? So one of the other things I think about with nomenclature that I've seen a lot of different conversations, especially on Twitter. So shout out to hashtag Gene Chat, which used to be GC Chat. We've kind of migrated over there. What are the best ways to indicate that someone is transgender on a pedigree? Are there different options? Is now in 2022, do we have a standard nomenclature if someone is transgender?
Yeah, all really good questions. So in terms of nomenclature, those symbols used on pedigrees to represent individuals, NSGC, the National Society of Genetic Counselors, first published nomenclature guidelines around 2008. And I know that there is...
That was the first time? That's really surprising. That's very late.
Yeah, well, I think that's the most recent time.
Okay, sorry, misunderstood that. Okay, got it. I was like, really? We've been doing pedigrees way longer than that. All right.
Absolutely. And I know that there's a task force really working diligently on this exact topic of how to represent trans folks. That being said, there's also really great research going on within the genetic counseling community, and there have been publications where the trans community has been consulted and the genetic counseling community at large as well. And I think the consensus is really to have options and to talk with your patients about what these symbols represent. And let them choose how they want to be represented on the pedigree. And I think gender first symbol representation is also important. So for example, a trans man who is assigned female at birth could be represented as a square to denote a man, and then putting AFAB to designate their sex assigned at birth would be one way to represent that person.
Yeah, I think that's a really astute point in that it's so important to involve community members in these conversations. So I think, you know, that's certainly something that we've done a lot on the show in terms of having patient advocates on so that they can speak to their community and thoughts that they have, as well as, you know, other people in the community and, you know, obviously having the genetics community weigh in as well. But I think that's really great. And also goes back to our point of rapport building, of saying, okay, like these is, you know, this is what these symbols represent. What do you feel comfortable with me drawing for you? And really being able to connect in that way. And then, as you said, kind of incorporating sex assigned at birth as well, so that you have the medical information there as well as, you know, their gender information. So I think that's important. And, you know, one that I've also seen conversations about is how individuals can be, you know, identified on the pedigree who themselves identify as gender nonconforming or non-binary, or are somewhere on the gender spectrum that isn't necessarily, you know, specific. So is there any kind of consensus in terms of what options we have for representing gender nonconforming or non-binary people?
Mm-hmm. Again, I guess it's another area where I think options are helpful, and no two people are going to want to be represented the same way. But I think a really good option for folks who are gender nonconforming or non-binary don't fall on that exact female or male, a diamond to represent them. And then again, designating their sex assigned at birth is one option. But I think it's also, we need to be sensitive around, again, how these people want to be, how the patient in front of you wants to be represented, keeping in mind that the pedigree is part of the medical record. And historically, people part of the LGBTQIA plus community have been marginalized, and there's a lot of prejudice around that still, unfortunately, to this day. So although a diamond might be a good option for one person, another person may want a square or a circle documented in the medical record. So it really depends.
Yeah, I really like using the diamond, and oftentimes we use that if we also don't know someone's sex or gender. So I think that's sometimes, you know, a natural one for genetic counselors to reach for, to use. Because even when I'm going through, sometimes, you know, I'm not asking, especially, you know, as a prenatal genetic counselor, I ask, all right, any of your siblings have children? And they're like, yes. I don't always go into, all right, how many boys, how many girls, if it's not necessary. You know, as we said, if there's not like an X-linked disorder or something where, you know, we're talking about cancer conditions where I say, okay, it's important for me to know the sex, I'll just draw a diamond and write how many kids, right? I'll be like, okay, this person has four kids, diamond, write a four in the middle, keep going. So I think that that's one that really naturally flows into what we've already been doing and kind of expanding onto it. Another thing that I've been, you know, really starting to incorporate into my pedigrees is jotting down pronouns that people use, especially for my patient and their partner, and kind of, you know, starting the conversation saying, you know, okay, your partner, like, what's their name, and using very gender neutral terms until they say something that tells me otherwise. So that's certainly something that I've been doing, and then denoting that. Is there a way to make note of this on the Phenotypes pedigree builder? Is that something maybe in the works?
Yeah, I think that's excellent that you're incorporating that into your just everyday practice. That's amazing. And I think the pedigree is a good place to put pronouns, because that's just one good component of gender affirming care, is making sure you're addressing your patient and their family with the correct pronouns. We know that that's been a barrier to care for a lot of folks. Just using the right pronouns can mean the world to someone. I think in the Phenotypes pedigree, we have a lot of flexibility built into the tool. And so under every person in the pedigree, there's a comment section that you can record free text in. So I think that's an excellent place to put that information. And especially when you're sharing the pedigree with other providers in the circle of care, it can help make sure that those pronouns are then used by other healthcare providers in that team too. So I think it's just the pedigree is a great, great place to put those.
Yeah, certainly. I think it's just easy to ask for pronouns at that point. And sometimes you don't even have to ask, because once they start talking about their partner, they'll start using pronouns, and then you just catch on. So it just very naturally flows. So I think I like that. And also having it in intake forms too. And you guys have the pre-visit questionnaire that actually aids with constructing an accurate pedigree. Can you speak a little bit about like how this works in terms of like using that pre-visit questionnaire?
Yeah, absolutely. So as Ryan mentioned, kind of the top of the podcast, we've developed out a pre-visit patient questionnaire that collects a lot of the information that would typically be on the pedigree and part of the appointment ahead of the appointment to help with an accurate assessment of the patient, and also to cut down on the amount of time taking that pedigree and focus more on the patient care and relationship building part of the appointment. And so that tool has actually been built out to ask for sex and gender separately.
That's huge. A lot of the forms don't. Like, I think all of us, we've been patients doing things just in life. And, you know, I'm always very curious what they're going to ask and what they assume, and having to correct, like, you know, it's just interesting to see how other healthcare providers do it. So that's just awesome you separate that, because that's what all forms should have.
Agreed.
And outside of your pedigree tool, are there other features that Phenotips have to support genetic professionals and, you know, the queer and you know, gender diverse community?
I think that pre-visit patient questionnaire is really great at supporting asking those questions and supporting those intake forms that are being changed to support this community. And it's not just about asking about the patient, but also about their family and their sex assigned at birth and separating that out from gender.
Yeah, I think that's really, really important and just great. I think when patients see that, they also know they're walking into meet with healthcare providers that are also going to be accepting and not only accepting, but embracing of them. I think when you see that ahead of time, it's somewhat assuring that you know that you're going to be walking into somewhere where you're going to feel comfortable. So I think that's a good sign, you know, as you're going in, because a lot of these, you know, pre-visit, they're doing it before the visit. So I think that's, you know, really, really helpful. Did you know PerkinElmer Genomics was one of the first laboratories to offer whole genome sequencing on a clinical basis? Whole genome sequencing can maximize clinical diagnostic yield for patients. With turnaround time of 4 weeks for the proband sample, PerkinElmer's whole genome sequencing test is designed to provide access to additional valuable information compared to an exome. PerkinElmer also offers prenatal whole genome sequencing as well as ultra-rapid whole genome sequencing for critically ill newborns using dried blood spots. The ultra-rapid genome has a turnaround time of 5 days and includes mito, chromosomal CNV analysis, STR-TNR screening, and biochemical analysis. Also, listen back to episode 176 with Dr. Maduri Hegde, where we explore the power of whole genome sequencing, which also happens to be one of my favorite episodes of DNA Today. And stay tuned for a couple more episodes with PerkinElmer soon. Discover all that PerkinElmer Genomics has to offer at PerkinElmerGenomics.com. HemaShare Therapeutics is dedicated to developing therapies that help improve the lives of people with rare genetic diseases. HemaShare is currently conducting a clinical trial for a potential new treatment for two ultra-rare genetic metabolic diseases called propionic acidemia and methylmalonic acidemia. Learn more about HemaShare and these ultra-rare metabolic diseases in episode 188 of DNA Today. You can also visit HemaShare.com. That's HemaShare.com. How do you like spending the summer? In my free time, I'm usually with friends at our apartment's pool. My spot is right next to the water, reading a book, most recently A Crack in Creation, which might come up on a future episode. I like keeping cool by sipping on some iced tea while I read, but I don't like all the sugar. So I've been enjoying Sound drinks instead. Sound makes unsweetened organic sparkling waters made with tea and botanicals. No natural flavors or sugar. My fave is the blueberry with cinnamon and hibiscus tea. Try it out by ordering at drinksound.com using promo code DNATODAY for 20% off. Again, that's drinksound.com with promo code DNATODAY for 20% off your order, plus you're supporting the podcast. Speaking of friends in my apartment, a bunch of them have dogs, and I love being able to offer them a treat when I take them for a walk or they visit my place. So I got Sundays for Dogs. Now, this is dog food, but it can also be used as dog treats. My friend Annie's dog, Frank, gets so excited when he sees me, and if I'm being honest, I think it's more the food than me. Sundays for Dogs is real food formulated by a vet with high-quality meats, veggies, fruits, and superfoods, then air-dried to perfection. Since you're a DNA Today listener, you can visit sundaysfordogs.com and use code DNA Today for 35% off your order. Support your pup and the podcast. You know, just thinking about all the ways that I use this, I often have patients that refer their siblings for preconception or pregnancy sessions. You know, I think Orion, kind of tying you more into the conversation, is there a way to avoid like re-entering the pedigree for family members? Because it's going to be the same pedigree if I have someone and their sister. It's just going to be, you know, a different person that I'm pointing to as the patient.
Yeah. One of the things that we tried to do very early on with the way that we built out sort of the pedigree builder and phenotypes more generally was to allow those pedigrees to be able to be shared across an entire family. So there's very much an explicit mechanism within phenotypes so that you can link multiple family members together into that shared family. Some healthcare systems and providers really want everything to be totally isolated. And in that case, they can do that. But what we're finding is there's an increasing adoption of sort of that maintaining that family record with those, that sort of shared family history across those relatives, so that the information is up to date across all of them, and avoiding all of the additional sort of data entry and management that would be entailed by having them be separate.
Yeah, it's a lot of extra work, and as opposed to just confirming information, especially if their sibling referred them there and has already told them that they're a patient there, then that, you know, to me unlocks, okay, they've already shared that information, so we can say, we have a pedigree. Do you want to confirm some of this information and update it? Because maybe it was a year ago. And then that original patient also then has an updated pedigree. So I think it works in so many different ways. And I think there's also people that are, you know, having pedigrees that they built somewhere and they're trying to incorporate it somewhere else. Or maybe they're listening to this and they're like, oh my gosh, I really have to switch to the Phenotypes Pedigree Builder, right? Is there ways that people can import pedigrees that they built them in other software and then put it into Phenotypes?
Absolutely. Yeah. So one of the big areas that we often support hospitals with is if they have a lot of existing family history information in a variety of formats. So we can do that to help them transition all of that over. But as an individual user, you can always, within the tool, actually import from a variety of different formats, whether it's from Boadicea or from a simple sort of PED file or from GEDCOM formats from older pedigree tools like Cyrillic or others. So all of those are supported.
Yeah, that's super helpful. And it's great that you're integrated with a lot of the major electronic health care, you know, medical systems. Like I think you mentioned Cerner and Epic at the beginning, right? That, you know, those are really big ones that so many places are using. Definitely, I'm more familiar with US and the New York base, but certainly I hear that being thrown around a lot. And so it's great that it's also integrated in that, because I think that would be like genetic counselor's first question, like, can I even use this? Will this work with what I have? And, you know, short answer is yes on that. And, you know, as we start kind of wrapping up here, Orion, I have to ask, because I kind of teased this at the beginning, I want to learn more about your role as the co-leader of the GA4GH Pedigree Standard Working Group, because this sounds really cool. Like, what is Phenotypes' influence in this group and in your personal influence as well?
Happy to talk about that for way too long. We don't have time for all of that, but yeah, no, it's an amazing group of people, volunteers from around the world. So the GA4GH as a whole is an amazing organization, sort of advocating and building standards in genomics and healthcare. So they were, I started working with them a number of years back, I don't even, 7 or 8.
When you started, like with the pedigree builders and everything,
with the matchmaker exchange, actually, for rare disease patient matchmaking, which was one of the first driver projects of the GA4GH. And so then after sort of finishing my postdoc and coming and joining the company, one of the areas of development that was on their roadmap was figuring out how to sort of innovate and advance the pedigree standards that are out there and available for connecting all these different tools in the space. So that ended up fitting very well with what we're trying to do at Phenotypes. So was very excited by the opportunity to co-lead that with Grant Wood, who's actually a very longtime leader in this space of family history with his work with HL7 and GDMC and Intermountain Health. So the two of us just sort of try to, I would say, help facilitate the standard development amongst a group of volunteers within the working group. And we're actually getting quite close to submitting that for approval for the first version within the GA4GH in the next couple of months. So
That's really exciting. I'm sure some of this is under lock and key, but I have to ask because people are thinking it. Is there any new nomenclature that's being proposed that's like coming down the pipeline, or is it all a secret?
So what I guess I would say is that the nomenclature per se is not the area in which we are developing the standards. We would leave that to the professional bodies within genetic counseling and genetics. But the area of focus for us is in terms of the actual sort of data formats. So think of it as building on top of PED or other file formats for moving pedigrees computably between all the different tools to try
making
to help
it versatile.
Making it versatile so that you can draw a pedigree in one tool and then use it for a risk assessment in another tool, et cetera. So
yeah, we need
and
that.
Actually, there's nothing under lock and key. So one of the important things about the GA for GH is that it's a fully open working group. So you could actually go and Google and find the notes from every call we've had.
Oh, wow.
If you're interested.
All right, homework for the listeners. You got to go check that out because that's what I'm doing after this call. Well, amazing. That's really cool. We'll have a link to that in the show notes so people can go right there. But thank you so much for having this conversation with me. I think this is something that was overdue on the show to kind of just, you know, dive into some of this in terms of just the importance. And I think, as I said, I had a feeling this is going to, I think, really go nicely with our next episode, which is going to be a release of the June installment of the Phenotip Speaker Series, which we're recording on June 16th. So this episode will come out after that, I believe. So you're listening to this the next day. But yeah, so we'll have the episode for that next week. And I think that will just be great to continue this conversation there. But thank you so much, Erica and Orion, just for sharing so much of your insight and just for having this very valuable conversation.
Thank you so much, Kira.
And people can definitely head over to phenotips.com. All the information for the speaker series is on there as well under, I believe it's the resources tab, if I'm remembering right. And so you can sign up for any upcoming webinars. All of them are free. So it's just a great resource to check out as well as the pedigree builder and everything. You can access a lot of like the information and just look at some of the tutorial videos on there. Those are really great and helpful. I've definitely taken advantage of those over the years. So all of that is at phenotips.com. For more information about today's episode, visit dnapodcast.com, where you can also stream all episodes of the show. We encourage your questions, comments, guest pitches, and ideas. Send them all into info@dnapodcast.com. Search DNA Today on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, so you can connect with us there. And a favor, please rate and review the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. This truly helps us climb the charts and allow more genetic nerds like yourself to find the show. DNA Today is hosted and produced by myself, Kira Dineen. Our social media lead is Corinne Merlino. Our video lead is Amanda Andrioli. Thanks for listening, and join us next time to discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.